Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm Justin Dunk, joined by Jumbo Cheese, the one and only JC Abbott on the West Coast. My man, how did you fill your weekend with the BC Lions not playing a football game? They were the team that was on a bye in preseason, what the CFL is calling week two.
Well, I just watched all the other games, Dunk. Not in a stadium from the comfort of my own couch. I had a double laptop setup going at one point for the two preseason games. It was pretty sophisticated, if I do say so myself, but just enjoyed some good old-fashioned preseason action.
I like the double barrel action. The question that I'm sure everybody's asking is, were the streams actually working on both of those computers at the same time?
Almost never. Eventually, we got there, but it was a struggle. I tried to get it on my... on my TV first. That was a lost cause. Then I had to go with the double laptops. One was working, then the other one wasn't working. It was not good. It took a whole tech crew to get it set up.
I asked because I had a similar situation, and I was trying to get, for example, the Riders Bombers game on the television. But compared to the stream that I had on my computer, the one on the TV was like glitching out. Like Braden Misery was like going back and forth on your screen, like, and then the one I was watching on my computer was going pretty well after that initial, I don't want to call it pause, but where people were trying to get on there and it wasn't working. So I think the CFL finally figured it out. But man, like, I don't want to harp on the league too much for this stuff, but they've done this in the past, JC. Like, how do you not understand the amount of people that are going to come and want to watch your product? And then when it doesn't work or it's too difficult, there's a time frame there where people just decide, oh, I'm going to turn it off. I'm going to go watch, for example, like the Blue Jays game, or I might go outside and touch some grass and enjoy the sunny day. Like, this stuff needs to work. And the CFL has done the preseason games this way in the past. So I can't understand why this was an issue this time around. I'm sure there's an explanation from it on the back end, but your consumers don't care. They just want to be able to access your product that you're trying to sell them, get them excited about to buy tickets for, not just the preseason, but all the way through the regular season into the Grey Cup.
Yeah, I'm not willing to give the league a lot of grace on this because it's not a new service. It's not like they were trying something out for the first time and it just didn't work as expected. And it's not the first time they've had these issues. And it's not the first tech issues that they've battled this offseason, right? We're just coming off the CFL draft where myself and Ben Grant had to spend 4 hours trying to predict who the draft picks would be because there wasn't a functional draft tracker. You'd think after an experience like that, they'd say for the next major event, let's make sure we've got all our ducks in a row, all our T's crossed, all our I's dotted. Clearly they didn't. It was a predictable tech issue when everybody rushed to the site to watch those two games simultaneously. Luckily, later in the day when they had the problems for the second time, they switched over to the YouTube model. I thought that was much more successful. It seemed to be a lot cleaner. But this can't keep happening, right? We were told years ago that this league was going to be on the cutting edge of tech and that Genius Sports was going to change the way that we stream CFL games and the way we could, you know, communicate with fans and the way the website was going to be run and all these advanced stats that we were going to get. We've seen none of it. All we've seen is problems since then. So I'm not exactly sure what that partnership, which, by the way, Genius is getting a segment of revenue for that, is actually doing for the league.
Yeah, man, you just have to have this stuff work. And it's simple things, like you said, with the CFL draft. You're promoting this product. And the place that had the best live draft tracker was Sportsnet, who is not even a league partner, right? Honestly, could probably almost care less about the Canadian Football League, but that's where I found the best draft tracker. You have to have this stuff work. And I get that there's going to be an explanation, but to the majority of fans out there, it's just going to sound like a bunch of excuses. And you're trying to sell your product after all. You know, I did think that it was smart for them later in the day to put the Elks Stampeders preseason game on YouTube, because that seemed to work really well once it was transferred over there. I understand you want people on your platform, but if it's not going to work, that opportunity cost is not worth what it is going to do to you from a public relations standpoint. Like, it was so bad that the CFL PR Twitter account had to put out a tweet, not only in English, but in French, to say, yeah, we are having technical issues. You know, if there was just a little bit of buffering issue, that would be understandable, right? And the league probably wouldn't have put out a statement about it, but it was that bad. Now, I don't want to sound like we're banging on the league, but we call balls and strikes, I think, here pretty fairly. And there's a lot of football that we're going to get into, you know, talking about the great athletes and the level of play in the preseason and on into the regular season. But this kind of stuff has to stop. Like, another small example, JC, the stats are still not fixed. The CFL Connect stats page had the Winnipeg Blue Bombers with punt returns and kick returns. But apparently, according to that page, they didn't know Dre McCray had a punt return or a kick return. Now, I'm sure the CFL stats crew at the game knew. But the tech, again, to your point, didn't work. It needs to work. Honestly, the players deserve better. They spend their entire offseason, or the majority of it, let's say, planning to be or preparing to be in peak physical form to go into the season to produce, to put on a great product. The CFL needs to step up to that kind of quality, in my opinion, with the tech and not have these issues anymore. Like, be done with it, okay? That's enough. Yeah, let's move on to some actual football. Today, we're discussing Drake flashing some CFL bling, 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 bling.
Air horns being silenced in Montreal.
Offensive line injuries continuing to plague the Riders.
And Canadian QB Taylor Elgersma hitting dingers in Green Bay. But first, Winnipeg Blue Bombers quarterback Zach Collaros signed a contract extension with the team through 2026, tacking on an additional year to his existing deal. Is that a smart move by the five-time defending West Division champs?
I do think it is smart, and let's be honest here, JC. Mike O'Shea is going to ride Zach Collaros until the wheels fall off or until he wants to stop playing football. That is the honest truth. If O'Shea is not the head coach in Winnipeg for some unforeseen reason, I can't see that, you know, happening in the next at least couple of years that Collaros is under contract, then that could change for the future. But I do think this makes sense, and we're going to get into it here. But just off the hop, you hear and we ask Kyle Walters about this leading into the season. And this is another time where, you know, you don't necessarily believe everything that the coaches and general managers tell you, JC, because Kyle Walters told us that this is something they'll deal with in the offseason when the year is over. And yet we have, before the Bombers preseason kicks off, Collaros inking a contract extension with the team, which I think is smart, by the way. And also, I think it's a great deal for both sides. This contract for 2026 is going to check in at the same amount as he's had for the previous three-year extension he signed. I believe that was in October 2022, if I have my years right. So for 2023, 2024, and 2025, Zach Collaros collected $600,000 in 2026. It will be the same $600,000. That keeps him among the highest paid quarterbacks in the league, Chad Kelly just above him, and Nathan Rourke a small smidge above that to be the highest paid quarterback in the league in 2025. You never know how these deals can be reworked. You know, going into the 2026 season, I would think Rourke's would come down from the massive number that it's currently at, but that's for another day. So I think this is all around smart, but there is more to look at when you are just thinking about a Kolaris extension, because there's other quarterbacks in the league and who could pop up and who could be good. But that's why I say ultimately, I think the main point is O'Shea is going to stick with Kolaris as long as he wants to play.
He definitely will. And Kolaris could play for a number of years still at a high level, but that's a question mark, right? He's 36 years old right now. He's not getting any younger. I know he's contemplated the idea of retirement in the past. Clearly he's kicking that can down the road, but I thought we saw a large step back from him last season. And that's my question mark with this deal. I don't want to say it's necessarily a bad deal because we don't know what the money side perfectly looks like at this time. And I also don't think it's ever a bad idea to give yourself some certainty at quarterback. But let's imagine here that much like his deal was set to make this year, there's $300,000 in guaranteed money in 2026 as part of this contract extension, because theoretically, by ripping up the final year of this deal, it becomes a multi-year contract. You can guarantee half of that in the final year. So you're $300,000 of guaranteed money. If that is the case on this contract, like it's been in the past, is that a situation you want to be in with a potentially 38-year-old Zach Kolaris? If he takes another step back, if he struggles like he did at times last year and the age finally catches up to him, because you can't really get out of that deal very easily. To me, that's the concern, is how is this structured? That remains to be seen. I'm not reporting that there's that guaranteed money, but there's the possibility of it. And if it's there, I think that's not a particularly wise decision by the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. If it's not guaranteed and they're just saying, hey, we've got you under contract now, but there's an out for the club if things go wrong, then I think it's an excellent deal by the team.
You know, I think there's some other factors that come into play here, right? It's Zach Kolaris being comfortable in Winnipeg, knowing that he's going to have some of those pieces around him. I would imagine talking with some of those guys, Stanley Bryant told us exclusively that he's planning to play into his 40s. You would imagine that he's hoping that Brady Oliveira signs an extension there. It would make a lot of sense, you know, to run it back for at least another year in 2026, depending what happens in 2025. But there's no certainty with that, right? Oliveira was highly sought after the last time he almost got to true free agency, but during the negotiating window, he had some big time offers from the Hamilton Tiger Cats and BC Lions. Now, it's hard to predict the market a year out, but you would think that Kolaris would look at the team and say, all right, I don't think Willie Jefferson, for example, is going anywhere. If Stanley Bryant's going to play, he's going to be here. The front office has shown, although Ted Gavaya is not there anymore, that they can develop and have quality talent there for us to be a contender. And Mike O'Shea is arguably, if not the best coach going in the Canadian Football League right now. So much so that we saw a Winnipeg fan on the live stream with a shirt on that says, O'Shea is my daddy. Now, I don't
Do you think Kolaris got that as like a bonus with the contract, like his very own O'Shea is my daddy shirt?
No. I don't think they view O'Shea as their daddy, but he's certainly a great leader of men, having won five straight West Division titles, having gone to five straight Grey Cups, winning two. Yes, they haven't got it done in three straight, but to get there is an unbelievable feat, and I think ultimately they would like to win one at home. The other part of this that admittedly you and our colleague John Hodge were talking about in our three-way group chat was looking ahead and trying to predict, like, okay, what quarterbacks could potentially have been available for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers to acquire, let's say, via trade, kind of like what happened with Vernon Adams Jr. going from the BC Lions to the Calgary Stampeders this offseason, or sign in free agency. But it's something that's hard to predict because you can always have a guy like Davis Alexander popping up out of nowhere, going undefeated as a starter, and all of a sudden Cody Fajardo's expendable. Or you can have like what happened in BC. Nathan Rourke comes back, what I think he felt like was probably early from the NFL, anticipating a longer, more legitimate shot. And then you have a surplus of starting quarterbacks in BC, leading to Adams Jr. going to Calgary.
There's not a lot of compelling options to that point, Dunk, out there. Now, Cody Fajardo would be one in Edmonton. Is he going to be satisfied backing up Trey Ford long-term? McLeod Bethel-Thompson in Montreal is another. Theoretically, you could see PJ Walker being a guy like that, although I'm not sure he's young enough in the preseason for another CFL club to go out there and, you know, use an asset to acquire him. But those are sort of the options on the market. You could also get a Jake Mayer or a Trevor Harris, depending on where Saskatchewan wants to go in their future. But I'm not sure any of those are an upgrade over what Zach is right now. The big thing for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers is going to be looking south of the border to what's happening in Green Bay with Taylor Elgersma, who they just drafted, because he could be a potential starting quarterback heir apparent to Zach down the line. Is it going to be a year stint with the Packers? Is it going to be a multi-year odyssey as he makes that roster and improves in the NFL? We don't know yet. That will be the storyline to watch, because he is an option that they already have the rights to that they can bring in and could potentially be a starter down the line.
There's some guys in-house in Winnipeg, which is probably what they would like to do, that could be developed or could be starters, like Chris Trevler. I know it was one preseason game, but he threw the ball much better than arguably at any point that we've seen him in the CFL in that game against Saskatchewan. Yes, it was preseason. So if he can translate that over to the regular season, perhaps Trevler's a guy down the line. The Bombers have decided to keep Terry Wilson, for example, at least over a guy like Shea Patterson, who had a number of starts for the Saskatchewan Roughriders last year, cut Patterson early in training camp. So it's very clear that they like Wilson. And then, you know, you talk to our colleague John Hodge and understand how they feel about Chase Artopias, and they feel like there's some upside. Now, it's going to be difficult to keep four quarterbacks on the roster. Artopias, if he's going to stay there, is going to probably have to accept a practice roster spot. But
not initially, because Zach is suspended for the first game of the season. So they need to keep all of those guys to meet CFL roster requirements. They'll be all three on the game day roster come week one.
Very true. Good point. So I think if you're Winnipeg, ideally you develop those guys in-house and they have the potential best quarterback in the league right now to learn from. I'm not saying Zach is the best, but he's got the most experience in the league and approaches it, you know, from a high level quarterback view, but also I think a coach view, just because of how long he's been in the Canadian Football League. It's kind of like Jake Mayer, you know, being able to learn from Trevor Harris, or Jack Cohn learning from Trevor Harris in Saskatchewan because he has such a wealth of knowledge. So I think that's probably ideally the way that Winnipeg would like to go, especially if that regime stays there with Wade Miller as president, Kyle Walters as GM, and Michael Shea as head coach. O'Shea has shown the propensity to promote from within. Just look at Jason Kogan, the offensive coordinator. Mike Miller used to be a player. Now he's the special teams coordinator. Of course, Jordan Younger, he was with the team as well and has succeeded Richie Hall as the defensive coordinator. And we've seen it at some other spots with Winnipeg as well, actually on the field. So ideally, I think if you're Winnipeg, that would make a lot of sense. And Taylor Elgersma would certainly fall into that bucket. I think he's got his arrow pointing up. There's a lot of hype about him. And I think some of it is legitimate for being with the Packers for at least a year, developing on the practice roster. They can evaluate how he's trending and then go from there. But nothing is certain. Things can change very fast in the NFL. Four CFL preseason games took place on Saturday, giving us our first chance to look at seven different teams. Plenty of starters saw action, with some thriving in new colors like Vernon Adams Jr. in Calgary, but others struggling in new roles such as Davis Alexander in Montreal. Who were your biggest winners and losers from preseason week two?
Well, let's touch on the guys you mentioned in that introduction, Dunk, because Davis Alexander, I think you have to be disappointed or underwhelmed with what he looked like in his first action as the anointed starter in Montreal. We all saw what he could do last year. Nobody's hitting the panic button or bailing on this project quite yet, but he was 11 of 18 for 69 yards in a half of action. He had a couple of really bad misses, a suicide pass that almost got Charleston Rambo hurt, and they managed to score a grand total of 1 point in a half of action. Now, normally when you stick your starters out there, Dunk, it's a series or two, maybe a quarter. He got 30 minutes, and he managed 1 point against what, for most of it, was no longer the Ottawa Redblacks' starting defense, right? They took those guys off the field a lot earlier than Montreal did. That's a little bit concerning, especially with all the positivity that we heard coming out of Montreal in training camp about how Davis was looking and taking this job and all the optimism we had about him last year. That's not a great first step. Now, does it mean anything? Not necessarily. It was a rainy day in Montreal. I'm sure he can bounce back. But this is a slightly different circumstance than it was in the past, because Davis was the young up-and-comer that this team had sort of built around making the heir apparent to Cody. He was going to get those opportunities when he was the backup. There wasn't a lot of pressure. Now, all the pressure's on him. He's the franchise guy. And you've got somebody in McLeod Bethel Thompson, who didn't look great in that preseason action ever, but is a proven CFL commodity, sitting behind you. And I know that the Alouettes say that he's got a extremely long leash to go through the learning curve of becoming a starter. But at a certain point, that's going to create pressure if there weren't results. And I think that was a disappointing first outing for the Alouettes starters.
That analysis is all fine, well, and good, but I'm going to channel my inner Allen Iverson, and Davis Alexander said should too, okay? Like, we talk about practice, not a game. Not a game that counts in the regular season. We talk about practice. Like, we talk about preseason, bro. I get it. There should be a little bit of worry there, but it's not like you're scheming specifically for a team like they did with Davis Alexander last year when he went undefeated as a starter and also had a comeback win that he didn't get, which I think we should change that quarterback win stat, but that's a conversation for another day. So until he struggles in the regular season, I am not going to be worried, okay? My biggest loser from these preseason games in week two was a guy that did not even suit up, JC. Mario Alford, because Dre McCray was popping in Winnipeg. The dude is 22, okay? Mario Alford is 34. All due respect, he's done a lot in this league. But if you're the Riders looking at this, there's no signing bonus tied to Mario Alford on the contract extension he signed with the team for 2025, so they can get out from this contract for nothing. And you can bring in a fresh, young 22-year-old who looked pretty good, didn't pull any CJ Sims-type bonehead mistakes in the preseason. We'll see about that in the regular season. But nonetheless, this is not only a guy that's a dynamic returner, runs in the 4.4s in terms of 40-yard speed, but he was a 1,000-yard receiver while he was playing in university down in the United States. So he gives you that added benefit of being a legitimate backup receiver. And when you're the Riders looking at, for example, having Tommy Stevens as a short yardage quarterback, your third on the roster, having a guy like that with that added flexibility is massive. Mario Alford can be a package guy, and they did that with him a little bit, but Dre McCray is a legit receiver, along with looking like a legitimate receiver. So I think it sucks to say, and again, I respect his game, but that Mario Alford is probably on the outs there in Saskatchewan, especially with, you know, a new regime. He was a holdover from the previous regime. So if you're Corey Mace looking at this unbiasedly, you're going, why are we not keeping this kid who's shown lots of upside, flip the field at least once with a 51-yard kick return in that game and help change field possession on the punt returns that he had as well? I'm not saying it's a foregone conclusion, But if you look at it from the majority or all the angles, JC, it looks like Alford could be one of those vets that's cut.
That's something that happens every single year in preseason, right? And there's a catch 22 a little bit, Dunk. If you're one of those vets, you've earned what you've earned in this league. You get the right to sit out some of these games. But when you're not on the field, you're not making an impression. And it's a what have you done for me lately type of business in pro football. It's always better to be younger than older. And it's always better to be cheaper than more expensive. When you've got rookies coming in and flashing with a distinct possible role on the roster like Dre McRae, you're not projecting anything. You know he can go out and do that job. That makes it very easy to make a decision that, frankly, the Saskatchewan Roughriders were pretty close to making this offseason anyway. It took them a long time to get around to re-signing Mario Alford. I think people were sometimes surprised by how long it took. And then once he got re-signed, maybe they were surprised he was brought back at all. I think you're spot on with that analysis, but he won't be the only one in the league, right? I look at a situation like Toronto and Kadeem Carey, we all know what he did last year to help the Argonauts get to the Grey Cup and put up over 1,000 yards rushing, but he's not getting any younger, and then he doesn't play in this preseason game, and you've got a guy like Mayon Chop Williams, who's got Ohio State Buckeye pedigree flashing like he did in that game with some of his physicality. You've already got Deontay McMahon, who's pushing for more reps there. And does it force some decisions there with Kadeem Carey? I don't know that it's necessarily to the same extent as a Mario Alford situation. But again, when it comes down to cost and teams are trying to put together these rosters and make sure that they're ultimately salary cap compliant, I think you have to look at every option like that. And it's very clear that Toronto is high on what they have in Williams.
Some teams don't care about the salary cap though, right? They'll just spend and pay the luxury tax. I'm with you though. They want to try to be salary cap compliant or at least around the salary cap. But you know, another one that comes to mind for me is Myron Mitchell in Winnipeg. Like you have Dylan Mitchell on the field playing in the late stages of that game. Meanwhile, Myron Mitchell's getting burned with the first team, with Zach Collaros. Now, it was hard to miss him because he had those red cleats on as well. But he's got, it seems like, some upside there in Winnipeg. Yes, Vernon Adams Jr. is obvious. Looked really good. But you're talking about Calgary being at home, playing a number of their starters against Edmonton, who you know didn't even start Trey Ford in that game, along with a number of their other key pieces. So, you know, he should look good. And I think that's the reason why your point about Davis Alexander, you know, it does give me a little bit of hesitation because Montreal was at home. And in those scenarios, when you're the home team in the preseason, you should have, you know, a number of your starters playing and look pretty good. That's the ideal scenario. I thought Zach Collaros looked really good. I know it's just a preseason game, but if I was betting money, I would be betting on him to have a bounce back season, especially when it comes to touchdowns and interceptions. Like this guy threw for over 4,000 yards last year. Let's not forget, becoming only the third Bombers quarterback in history to do so. I believe the other two, if I'm not mistaken, were Kahari Jones and Ken Plain. So you're in rarefied air when you do that. And I think if he protects the football better, he could have a much better statistical season, and that can help Winnipeg's offense. It's just a preseason game, though. And I'll harken back to Allen Iverson. Like, we're talking about practice, man. Like, this is essentially glorified practice. Yes, it means a lot to the guys who are on the bubble. And I felt like it meant a lot to a player like Jackson Ford, who has a lot of upside, very cerebral, smart, and fast, too, in the back end. And you talk about, JC, guys not playing and someone else has the opportunity. Well, Nelson Lacombo started almost the entire season last year at safety for Saskatchewan and looked good, especially near the end of the regular season. But you got a guy like Jackson Ford flying around, that just pushes the compete level there. So I think if you're the Riders, you got to be happy with that scenario that you have Nelson Lacombo, who's got a bunch of starts there at safety under his belt. You now have a healthy Jackson Ford who looks really good there. And then you have a guy like Jaden Dahlke, who appeared to have an interception, but Marcus Sales was called for pass interference upon review, that can go back and forth now. They've moved him down to linebacker. but we know that he can play in a pinch for you and actually has started games for the Riders at safety. So Jackson Ford would be one of my winners from preseason week two.
The other losers, Dunk, unfortunately, is anybody who got hurt in these preseason games, because that can be devastating for the team and can be devastating for these players. I'm sure we will get a more thorough accounting of the injuries as, you know, this day progresses, as we get into the next week of practice. But it looks like one of the more serious ones to come out happened before the Toronto Argonauts even took the field, unfortunately, which is never a good sign. Brian Cox Jr., formerly of the Saskatchewan Roughriders, who they acquired in free agency to rush off that edge opposite Derek Parrish, appeared to go down with a non-contact knee injury in warmups and had to be carried off the field by his teammates. You never want to see that. In that scenario, we'll be awaiting word from Ryan Dinwiddie as to the seriousness of that injury. But that's another thing that you have to watch coming out of these games, is who got banged up and who has opened up a spot for somebody else because they won't be available.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
The Saskatchewan Roughriders are once again facing injury issues along the offensive line. Canadian center Sean McEwen went down with a leg injury earlier in training camp, while National Philippe Gagnon suffered a torn bicep and will also miss substantial time. With second-round CFL draft pick Eric Anderson also expected to be unavailable to start the season, does Rider Nation have reasons to be concerned?
I don't think so yet. There's no doubt that the offensive line would be better with Sean McEwen and Philippe Gagnon available. That is not even a question. But they've slid Logan Ferland over there to center. He played there, you know, a decent amount of time last year when they had injury troubles. And Riders fans know well that he can move around the offensive line and play really quality football. He's a reigning West Division most outstanding offensive lineman for what he did last year. And then it seems to me like Zach Fry now would be the backup center. He actually took the initial reps in training camp at center after McEwen went down, but then they decided to slide Ferland over there. And fortunately for Saskatchewan, they had released Canadian offensive lineman Noah Zur early in training camp. He hadn't yet got picked up, so they were able to bring him back. He has the familiarity of Mark Mueller's scheme. That's really going to help. So I think the depth there is still pretty good. And one guy, you know, JC, that you singled out, and Corey Mace did more importantly, was Daniel Johnson. Like, I'm very curious to see how his development continues. Didn't seem to me like he looked out of place there in Winnipeg. The Riders left Jamarcus Hardrick home smartly. Like, we know what he can do. He's coming off a season-ending injury. You don't need to play him, I think, at all in the preseason. So Johnson got the start at right tackle. And I thought, you know, he was at least okay. And if he can continue to trend that way, the Riders are going to continue to be deep on the offensive line and also have key ratio options for how they want to deploy their offensive line and then how they look overall at the ratio for seven Canadian starters.
Yeah, if Johnson can turn into a viable tackle, that makes him extremely valuable as the sixth man. And you know, Daniel Johnson had a lot of questions about him coming through the CFL draft process. None of them were about his talent. Every time he was on the field at Kent State or at Purdue later on, he was extremely productive. He played at a high level. He didn't allow a lot of pressure. He showed tremendous athleticism. The problem was he kept blowing out his knees. He couldn't stay on the field and couldn't stay healthy. And in fact, you know, I think the thing that helped him more than just simply being around pro football last year was the fact that he didn't have to play. He got a full year to rest those knees and get back to full strength, which he felt wasn't handled properly in college. Certainly at Kent State, he thought his injuries were mishandled and they made them worse. I know when I talked to him at the College Gridiron Showcase before he went through the draft, he was still having to get multiple injections and do all sorts of treatment on those knees after his final season at Purdue, which he missed the bulk of because they just didn't feel right yet and he was nowhere near close to healthy. Now he appears to be, and I think that's an exciting thing for the Riders offensive line going forward. I don't know if it will come into play this year because they don't have the depth right now to start a Canadian tackle. But if somebody goes down, I don't think I would be afraid to stick him out there based on what we've seen and the way Corey Mace has talked about him. And that's extremely positive. I still would like to see them add one more Canadian piece on the interior, pick somebody up off the scrap heap when we see some of these rounds of cuts ahead or after next week's preseason games. There will be somebody available out there. I even look at somebody who's available right now in a Dayton Black, a former first round pick who got cut by the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Can you bring him as a reclamation project similar to what you've done with Noah Zur? He also played for the Saskatchewan Huskies, although he's a Winnipeg guy. So there are options out there. There are ways you can reinforce it. They'll be comfortable with their starting lineup, just lacking a little bit of depth, I think, inside.
The other part to this is the fact that Trevor Reed is currently a National Football League free agent, and the Riders retain his rights through the 2025 season. Now, he would actually have to come back up here, and we don't know if that's necessarily going to be the case. It seems like Reed wants to wait it out to try to get another NFL opportunity. But if you add Reed back into this mix, you know, I don't think it necessarily matters if you had the depth, if you needed to play Daniel Johnson at right tackle, because you have so many good Americans there and you have Canadians at other spots. Like, the Riders could roll out three, four, potentially five Canadian receivers if they needed to, at least in my opinion. I don't think they're necessarily going to do that, obviously, right? They want to keep guys like Keyshawn Johnson and Sean Bain Jr. on the field when he gets back healthy. But I think the opportunity is there. Your point's well taken with Daniel Johnson. You know, Jamarcus Hardrick is under contract for this season. He restructured. He got a signing bonus there. So he's locked in with the team. Corey Mace and the whole group loves him by all accounts. So if you're Daniel Johnson, you get another year of development, where, as you alluded to, you could potentially be the sixth or the seventh offensive lineman, depending how many of the Riders dress, get your game checks, learn from an elite player, and potentially be ready to start in 2026. Now, I think your point's well taken, and you mentioned Dayton Black. There's some other offensive linemen that are still out there. Phillip Blake would like to play if an opportunity presents itself. Yes, people are going to be like, well, that guy's so old, but when he's played, he's played at a high level. He's a versatile offensive lineman. And to your point, JC, there are going to be some other cuts that probably surprise us to some degree when the final roster cuts happen. And for the uninitiated, we should share with people that deadline is Saturday, May 31st at 10 p.m. local time across the country for all nine of the teams. Now, there is not, this seems weird to say, a specific number that the teams have to get down to. It just comes to whether you want to pay guys off the salary cap. So you're allotting even more money, potentially, to those players that you want to keep around that you can't fit on your active roster.
Yeah, you can stash as many guys as you want on that one-game injured list. as long as you're willing to pay them. It's not sustainable to have 30 guys on that list because they'll all earn game checks as if they were paying, and that'll cause you headaches financially. But if you've got a few extra rookies that you don't want to lose, you can afford to keep them around, and most teams will find a way to do that.
Alouettes games could be quieter in 2025 as the team has officially banned air horns at Percival Molson Stadium. In an exclusive interview with Three Down Nation, Pablo Herrera Varguera, our guy out in Montreal, the fan who popularized these noisemakers expressed disappointment in the decision and said he won't be going away, presenting several alternatives. That's why I stress it could be quieter. There's no guarantee there, okay? Did Montreal make the right call with the air horns?
First of all, I would just like to discuss a few of these alternatives that Denis Généreux, the guy who popularized the air horn, has suggested, because they're wild. If people are complaining about individual air horns in the stadium, he's suggesting we get one large team sponsored air horn, like an air cannon, if you will, that the team operates, and that'll be good. Are you kidding me? You're making the problem worse. Or a section of the stadium called the noise nest, where all the noisemakers can go during games and sit in their own noisy little section. First of all, who would want to sit there? That sounds terrible. But also, here's a key tip for Denis here. Noise travels. If you've got a section in the stadium where you've got a bunch of air horns, everybody else can hear that as well. So I'm not sure I buy all these alternatives that he's presenting to the team, but this was something that had to happen. How many more years were we going to talk about the way that these air horns were interfering with people's viewing experience when games were played in Montreal? I have no idea what it was like to be in Percival Molson Stadium live. Unfortunately, John Hodge is not with us this week, and he got a chance to experience that, so he could speak to that more than I could. But from watching it on TV, it's just not good. It is not a scenario that is enjoyable because it interferes with your listening experience to the calls. It's sharp, it's grating, it's irritating. It makes you want to turn the TV off. Those are not things that the CFL should want their broadcast to include, and I'm glad that there's finally something being done about it.
I don't like the decision, man. It's a unique atmosphere to Montreal. I have been there for Montreal Carabin games, specifically the Vanier Cup that they won when they beat McMaster. I forget the exact year. JC, maybe you can look that up while I'm giving my take here. But it's a unique atmosphere. Okay. That's the thing that I think that we're missing here. Does it annoy some fans? Yes, but it largely annoys the fans that are the opposing team's fans. And we talk about Winnipeg and Saskatchewan going back and forth for being the loudest stadiums in the league, which I think is a great rivalry right now. I just don't think you want to take away a unique atmosphere. Is there a way that you could have perhaps quieted the air horns or limited their use in some way to balance it out with the fans who really feel it's annoying? I think that's a possibility. So for that reason, it's just sad for me to see this decision happen. You know, I get how they can be annoying, but like from an athlete's perspective, it becomes white noise and you just block it out. So if you don't really like it, don't hone in to that sound. That's just my personal opinion. But the bigger picture here is that it created a unique atmosphere in Montreal and it gave an even more home field advantage for the players and the team with the Alouettes. I think if you ask the players about this, they might not say it on the record, but privately, they would probably tell you that we love the air horns because it's so loud, it makes it hard for the opposing offense to do their thing. I get how some people could argue that it's not crowd noise, it's not noise being made by a human being, but there's all types of noisemakers in all different sports. Like in the World Cup, I think the Vuvuzelas became a massive thing, right? But it's
people
like
people hated that too.
they hated that too. It's like, we just hate things, right? We want to complain about things. Why can't we just embrace things? All right. Embrace people for who they are. Embrace Montreal for its air horns, the ambiance, right? Like, I was talking about this with Wes Cates, and he was saying that Montreal was his favorite place to play. Yes, it was because he had some memorable individual games there, and the Riders went there and won. But the air horns didn't bother him at all. So that's what I'm talking about. Like, it creates a unique atmosphere. I hope there is some workaround that is found. So Denis Jenneroux, as you pronounce so well, JC, hopefully I did it justice, gets to honk his air horn or blast that thing, whatever you call it, again with a number of other fans in Montreal.
I think I've got an air horn somewhere around here, Dunk. I'm going to bring it on the podcast, and we'll see how much of a lovely atmosphere it creates when you're trying to do your job.
Won't bother me at all, bro.
No, it's just going to plow on through, hey?
Won't bother me at all.
There are certain aesthetic, like, I love that they have their own thing going. Sad to see it go, but there are aspects to making games enjoyable. And there's a reason why Vuvuzelas did not return for multiple World Cups afterwards. It's because people hated watching World Cup games because they heard the Vuvuzelas constantly.
But, like, there were complaints about that. People are given noisemakers at professional games, right? Like, you go to an NBA game, you get those two inflated plastic sticks that you bang together.
Or, like, no problem with different kinds of noisemakers. Basic noisemakers, but. A, those noisemakers are generally manual, right? Bang two balloons together, not here, let me press a button while compressed air makes a sound. Like, you did not compress the air in the can yourself. Let's be frank about that. You can't.
Okay, so what about the flutes that they're going to use or wanting to use?
Again, it's your own breath that is generating the sound from the flute. At least with the Vuvuzela, that's a similar thing to these flutes. I just think there are certain sounds, certain created noisemakers that are too grating to be used for a product that ultimately has to be packaged and sold to fans everywhere, right? The amount of complaints that came from TSN broadcasts in Montreal because of this handful of fans was off the charts. It was a meme, right? The team was leaning into it. Other teams were taking pot shots at it. Everybody knew about that. Maybe you could argue that's good marketing for the league, but it's not good marketing when you're turning off the television because you can't watch it anymore. I think that's the stage that a lot of fans were getting to with this particular grating sound. Something had to be done.
It's too bad. And, you know, my next question goes to who would we ask about how this decision was made in Montreal? Because, the team doesn't have a president.
I guess you gotta ask Danny Mac.
Pierre-Carl Peliteau, PKP?
Get him on the horn, Dunk. Oh,
I'd like to have him on the record and get his take about, the air horns. Get him on the horn about the air horns. I like it. We don't have John Hodge, so we're skipping Hodge's heritage moment. Let's go to the three-minute drill. The BC Lions have signed American quarterback Hank Bachmeier. That makes me think of, like, a famous music composer for some reason. Was that a necessary addition?
Well, Bach is indeed a composer.
That's why it makes me think of it.
You're on the right track there, Doug. I think it was a necessary addition. They've sunk 3 years at this point into Chase Bryce. I still haven't seen anything that gives me confidence that he's got a long-term future in the CFL. Get some competition here for the last preseason game. Let's really test him. Grey Cup Award winners Nick Arbuckle and Dijon Brissett threw out the first pitch at a Blue Jays game this week. Dunk, what's the worst first pitch that you've ever seen?
You know, I think the easy one for everybody is 50 Cent. Now, I know he played at a BC Lions game, or was that the Lions game?
Yes.
That's right. I was thinking it was Grey Cup.
Concert kickoff, my guy.
Super Bowl. Sorry, he played at Super Bowl, too. His given name is Curtis Jackson. Like, he had a terrible one that, you know, jumps to mind. I think a lot of people would know. But, man, that's not easy. Like, there's a lot of pressure. I've talked to Tim McAuliffe, my colleague at Sportsnet, who has done it at a Jays game before. And it's different, man. You're out there on the mound, 60 feet, 6 inches, all by yourself. There's usually a pretty good crowd there at Rogers Center. Sometimes it can be jam-packed. I know I would fire one down the heart for a strike, but some people who have done it have told me no. It's nerve-wracking.
There's no way. No way. Prove it. Prove that you're going to throw that strike.
If they want to invite us to throw out the first pitch, I don't care if it's for the Blue Jays or some of the minor league teams across the country. I am down, bro. I will hit that glove and make it pop. Quarterback Talia Tagovailoa, the brother of Miami Dolphins star QB Tua, has landed in JC's favorite league, the European League of Football's Hamburg Sea Devils, after being released by the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Is it a surprise that a CFL team didn't pick him up?
I don't think it is. Talia has always had the statistics, right? He's the Big 12's all-time leading passer. Big 10's all-time leading passer with Maryland. But he never had his brother's pop. I don't think he had his delivery. He was more of an athlete. I think this is a perfect spot for him. Nothing I saw from him last year suggested he was a long-term CFL quarterback, and Hamburg needed somebody to run their offense. He fits the mold of the quarterbacks who have success in that league. Have a good time in Europe, kid. That's where you're best suited.
Just before we move on here, I played one season in Germany, JC. So bear with me for a second. I know it's supposed to be the three-minute drill. I had an opportunity to play in GFL1, I believe it was called at the time, the top league in Germany. I think it was with Berlin Adler. And I remember, like, for the uninitiated, like, they pay your plane ticket. They get you what they call a flat over there. Over here, we will call an apartment or a condo. They usually take care of a bunch of your food. Like, I had a car and a gym membership. But I decided ultimately to play third division because I wanted to play with one of my buddies. I won't name him on here. Well, maybe he's probably cool with it. Josh McCrae, who was a backup running back with me at the University of Guelph, he didn't have a lot of film. So the highest level of team that would take him was third division. So I decided to go there, forfeiting about 4,600 euros per month of salary. Like, Berlin Adler was going to pay me 5,000 euros a month, plus take care of everything else. So what I'm getting at, JC, is do you think that I'm a better quarterback or just as good as Talia Tagovailoa?
Yes, Dunk. I think you're just as good. No, there are levels to this. Football in Europe has taken huge strides.
But we're talking about Berlin Adler. Like, that's a legitimate team, bro.
It was a legitimate team, but I mean, Berlin Adler is still a GFL1 squad. I believe actually they fell down to GFL2 for a bit, but I could be mistaken with that. At that time, they were a powerhouse. But the ELF is a different animal. They're bringing in a different caliber of American, a more professionalized approach, a little bit more salary. Every single person in these leagues theoretically is now paid, even the local guys, although it's not a substantial amount, it's more of a stipend, but it is in theory professional in the night that everybody is paid. So it's a slightly different dynamic than the old school GFL. I don't know that it's dramatically better. They actually use fewer Americans now in the current ELF model than the GFL did. But I think it's a little bit more professionalized and a higher caliber of guy that they're recruiting at this stage.
There was one thing I took issue with. You mentioned Americans there. And I was a Canadian going over there. I loved my experience. Still keep in touch with some of the coaches and teammates that I played with for just one season over there. But I had to wear an A on my helmet. I'm like, yo, I'm Canadian. Can I wear a C? No, it had to be American because that's the way that the rules were written. Didn't like it.
It's still like that. Canadians and Mexicans, for the record, as well as Japanese players, all count as A's.
Change your rule, man. It's not that hard.
Doug, Toronto Argonauts receiver Demonte Coxey told you he was an Amazon delivery driver before finding CFL stardom. How cool is that?
It's super cool, man. Like, he went through a long period. I believe he told me it was around a year and a half where he hadn't been offered a contract. He went to, I think it was Green Bay Packers rookie minicamp, didn't get a contract after that. and kept at it. But he said that there were days where he thought, you know, maybe I'm going to have to move on from football. But he stayed with it, kept in shape, got that call from the Argos, and obviously has taken advantage of the opportunity. One of those positive, only in the CFL type stories. Head coach Corey Mace made the Saskatchewan Roughriders run wind sprints, then called practice early after a few post-whistle scuffles on Thursday that he believes would have led to penalties if it were a regular season game. Do you think he laid down the law?
I think he did, and his team responded. I think there was only four penalties for 25 yards or something close to that in the Riders' preseason game. I love Corey Mace setting the tone and setting the expectations for his team when they have a little bit of a slip-up. That's just good coaching. Ottawa Redblacks running back William Stanback thinks it will be, quote, tough for West Division teams to contend with the East this year. Is he off base?
I don't think so. Man, if I'm not mistaken, didn't the East Division have a better record against the West last year?
They did.
So if I'm looking at that, now there's a reason they play the games, but the East Division teams all return starting quarterbacks in the same offenses. Yes, Davis Alexander wasn't the starter for the whole year, but he's very familiar with that offense. Drew Brown, same in Ottawa, Bo Levi Mitchell in Hamilton, and Chad Kelly when he's healthy in Toronto. And then they still have Nick Arbuckle there. Like, I could see that happening this year. You know, I still have major question marks about BC, and I need Calgary to prove it until I'm going to get really excited about Vernon Adams Jr. and what's going on there with the Stampeders. So I think, yes, going into the season, it seems like the East Division is the better division, but that has to be proven on the field in 2025. Canadian icon Drake posted an Instagram photo of him wearing a chain with a diamond-encrusted Saskatchewan Rough Riders logo, of all things. Has he been a secret CFL fan all along?
Dunk, forget about getting PKP on the horn. We need to get Drake on the phone because I don't know how this happened, what it even means. Maybe Six God has not been talking about the 416 the entire time. It's been the 306. He's truly Six God for Regina, not Toronto. Canadian quarterback Taylor Elgersma was the home run derby champion at the Green Bay Packers annual charity softball game, beating out fellow QBs Jordan Love and Malik Willis. Can that help him make the roster?
You know, people might laugh at this, but I think showing yourself as an athlete among other great athletes can help him make the roster. Like, was Sean Clifford out there? The current third-string quarterback for the Packers?
He was, but he was not hitting dingers. And Mike LaFleur was in attendance.
Exactly.
Matt LaFleur.
So, I'm not saying it's football, and, you know, it's a little bit of me with my tongue in my cheeks, and it's going to help him make the roster, but showing your athleticism helps check that box in the minds of the decision-makers, like the GM, Brian Gutekunst, and, as you mentioned, Matt LaFleur being there in attendance. JC, my man, we got to let the people know, okay? Be a friend, tell a friend about the show, subscribe, rate, give us those 5 stars. We need it. Hop on with us on YouTube. If you subscribe, you get the notification the moment the podcast is posted. And for the season going forward, we're going to do our best to put the podcast out either on Sundays or Mondays or on those weeks like Labor Day when there are games on Mondays. The show will definitely be out by Tuesday, but we want to give you our breakdown, you know, as quick as we can. And ideally, you know, it fits well into our schedule. So I think we can make it happen. So expect the podcast to come out on either Sundays when there's no games or Mondays at the latest. And on weeks when there are Monday games, it'll be out on Tuesday. You know where to come for all the best Canadian Football League information. That's 3downnation.com. So help us boost up the podcast with Jumbo Cheese and our guy Jean Auge out in Winnipeg. That's it for this edition of the 3Down Nation podcast. Join us for our next episode, won't you?
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.